Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Artist First World Radio Network. Home of the best music you've never heard and home of the best new talk shows you need to hear. Please don't forget to visit our archives page at www.artistfirst.com, where you can hear all our past shows for free and on demand. You are tuning into the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. This show airs every Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For more information about this show and to listen to past shows for free, please visit artistfirst.com/MaxineThompson.htm. And don't forget to follow Artist First on Twitter. You can find us under the Twitter handle at @artist_first. And now here is your host of the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show, Dr. Maxine Thompson.
Good evening. Thank you for tuning in to the Dr. Maxine Thompson Show. I'm Dr. Maxine Thompson of MaxineThompson.com and MaxineThompsonBooks.com. As you know, I'm the author of novel The Ebony Tree, award-winning novel Hostage of Lies, short story collection A Place Called Home, sequels L.A. Blues, and latest release L.A. Blues 2, Slipping into Darkness. I'm also a contributor to best-selling e-books, A Place Called Home, best-selling anthology, Secret Lovers, Never Knew Love Like This Before, All in the Family, and Proverbs for the People. All books are available nationwide or at my websites. The Hush Hush Secrets of Writing Fiction That Sells and The Hush Hush Secrets of Making Money as a Writer is also available on Kindle and Nook. Tonight's guest is the founder of Bio Soul Readers and Writers Conference. His name is Clarence Nero. He's also an author. He's the author of novel Three Sides to Every Story and young adult novel, I think it's Chica, A Child Out of Desire. Good evening. How are you doing, Clarence?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. I was telling you today how the networking from your conference from last year made me about six different types of checks. And it all came from one writer going there. She got two book deals, and I edited two books for that writer, and then, for that company. Then I ended up editing for Wahida, for her actual book, Wahida Clark, her latest book, which is Payback Ain't Enough, and it hit the New York Times after about a week and a half of being out. And also worked on The Basketball Wives. And so that all came from that connection at your conference. So I really feel like your conference must have some really good energy there.
Wow, I really appreciate hearing that story, because that was my vision and my dream, to connect people together, writers, emerging writers, established writers, publishers, and authors, and bring us under one umbrella to be supportive of one another. That was my vision. So when you told me that, I was like, wow, I am making a difference, because you don't really know if you are. And that was my first year, so I didn't know what was going to evolve and what was going to happen. But, I heard that happen, and then another person got a book deal, and then just right out of Baton Rouge, Drusilla Mars got a deal with Ashley and Jaquav, his book, as a result of a contest that ran with my conference. So, a lot of other self-published authors end up calling and telling me, oh, you definitely made a difference, because we were connected with people from New York, editors and agents, and that's what the Bayou Soul Writers and Readers Conference is about. Like I said, bringing readers together to meet up with their favorite authors, as well as writers to connect and possibly, like you said, result in a connection that can land them a book deal. Because you have a lot of authors who are at the conference who, they're not in the whole, they're not New York Times bestseller, they're not in the loop in New York. They're just writers who write every day. Some of them have self-published, but then they can meet up with somebody like Wahida, who's more established, and Wahida could, pull them up. The theme of the conference was lifting each other as we climb to the top. So the fact that Wahida reached back and grabbed Sheila, that's the goal. This year, the conference theme is standing on the shoulders of giants. I want it to have some purpose beyond just us getting together. It's not just another literary conference. I want it to have a purpose to bring us together, to support one another, and also give back to the community. So a big part of my conference is bringing youth high school students to the event. Last year, we had 250 high school kids from New Orleans and Baton Rouge, and they came, and they, for the first time in their lives, they actually met up with authors that looked like them. And a lot of them were surprised. They had never met so many authors before. They got free books, got books signed. They were empowered by the authors giving speeches about you know, a lot of these street lit authors like Wahida had gone to prison and had transformed her life around. She was able to share that story with these young people. So the conference had a dual purpose to also get back to the community. And it, like I said, that's what the Bayou Soul Writers and Readers Conference is. And that, like I said, I'm honored that you're coming this year. So I got to tell you that, you know, you're going to be teaching a master class and helping other writers understand the craft of writing. And this is where, you know, like I said, once again, who knows what could evolve out of that, you know, in that particular class. You know, I have a writer, there are some great writers down here in Baton Rouge and in New Orleans area who never would have the opportunity to meet a person like you, Dr. Thompson, you know, because you're way in California, or meet an agent in New York. They, you know, they don't have those type of connections, but over the years, I've, you know, made those connections. I'm able to bring all these people under one umbrella. You know, I'm working with a young, you know, writer out of Baton Rouge now, Devin Harris, who's working on a street lit series that I'm sure people are going to be hearing about, and maybe, you know, you'll probably get to meet him at the conference, you know, who's a great street lit writer, you know what I mean, but he has no way of knowing how to connect that to, you know, to the right people. But the right people end up at the conference, and here he meets you, who knows, you like it, or somebody else likes it, and the connection is made. That's what I hope the Bayou Soul Writers and Readers Conference. I wish I had something like that when I was emerging. And that's why I want to do this conference, because I always, as a writer, I'm sensitive to other people and what I've been through, and I'm hoping to make a way for other people. Sorry to run on. I was hoping
to
run.
Okay. Well, I want you to give some of your story. Tell us about Clarence Nero. Who are you? Let's talk about you. What's your background?
I grew up in New Orleans in the Desire Project. This is the notorious Desire that was known, had become well known for homicides and drugs and violence in New Orleans. It was not the best place to grow up, but that's where I ended up. And, you know, with a mother, single mother, trying to raise three sons. And, you know, out of that experience, you know, I, you know, saw a lot of tragedies and gone through a lot over the years. I mean, when you live in a place like Desire, there are going to be some tragedy. I've lost cousins to violence. I've also lost three brothers to violence, not in Desire, but just in over the course of years. In New Orleans, CNN did an interview in September that ran about violence in New Orleans, and they interviewed me about the loss of brothers. One of my brothers was killed last year in February, Sean Simmons, who inspired me to do an essay contest in his name. So some of the kids who came to the event had written an essay. That's another component. I wanted to promote literacy and reading and education, so I did that in his name. So, I'm somebody who's seen a lot of tragedies, who've gone through just like most people, you know. I'm sure that's not unique. We all have gone through something, you know, so I'm not saying anything unique about that, but I've overcome some tragedies and gone through some pain and, I had to deal with the violence and the poverty. You know, I had, growing up, had a mother on drugs. You know, anything you could think about the perils of urban life, I have had to deal with it. It touched me in some way. And out of those experiences, I decided I wanted to write a book, and I wrote it, Cheeky, A Child Out of Desire. You know, I wrote out of my pain for healing purposes and went on to be a writer. I was a chemist at first, but I was a chemist turned writer. I decided to start writing, and it took me on a different path.
Well, to become a chemist, let me jump in. You went to college, I take it, right? How did you go to college? What was that step? See, this is what a lot of kids, because when I talk to kids and they know where I came from, I laugh now. They didn't call it that. But I've been a lot of the things you've described. And so how did you get to this point? And I tell them I was exposed to a whole different lifestyle. It was just a serendipity, a crazy turn of events where I ended up in an all-white community that, even though they considered themselves middle class, they were living like rich compared to where I came from. You know, skis, water, had their own lake home and 12 bedrooms. So that exposed me. Even though I didn't pay it any attention, I kind of put it in the back of my head. Then college became more of not just a possibility. It became like a given that I was going to go because I was around other kids that were getting ready to go to college. So what brought you, what was that turning point that got you out of Desire into college? Was there a teacher that inspired you?
Oh, not to cut you off, sorry about that. But yeah, definitely. I mean, definitely I had teachers who saw something in me. You know, I had, they were supporting me. I had my grandmothers who were very strong spiritual women who encouraged me, took me to church, supported me, gave me the love that I may have been lacking at home or, and you know, I had support around me. And those teachers and those family members that supported me in community, people in the community, because back in those days, in the 70s, people still looked out for each other. You know, if you were not acting right, you'd have a neighbor down the street who would pull you together and, you know, and bring you home and tell your mama. You know, we had that sense of community, even though we were in the project. So I think all those people working together and just me deciding for myself that I wanted better. You know, I it was a conscious decision that I made. You know what I mean? I knew that I wanted to do good, and you know, and I was praised for doing good. I think having, you know, my mom, even with all her issues that she had going, every time I would get a, you know, good grades on my report card, she would buy me a birthday cake, because cake was something I loved, birthday cake. I love vanilla cake and vanilla ice cream. So every time I would do good in school, she would get me a cake and ice cream, and people were praising me for doing good, and that made a difference. That's why I always say you got to encourage kids, and when they do good, acknowledge it. In some way, keep encouraging. You know, the patrol lady. I never forget the patrol lady. He used to patrol as we crossed the street. Would give me money. She just made a deal with me. I don't know why. And I don't know if she did it with other people, but I heard that she did. And she said, if you get an A, I'm going to give you $10. So, and you got that kind of encouragement. You had those type of people in the community that was pushing me to do better and celebrated me when I did. And I have to tell you, it went a long way. Me trying to get A's to get those $10, or me looking forward to getting that 4.0 to get that cake and ice cream. You know, those type of things encourage me. And I started early on realizing, wait, if I keep doing good, you know, this is my way out. You know what I mean? This is my way to shine. And I loved it. I loved excelling in academics. You know, we have people excelling in sports. That wasn't my thing. You know, but we don't celebrate kids enough when they do well in education. We don't encourage education enough. You know, we don't say the importance of education. If you do this, you know, we're going to celebrate you for doing good. We don't do that enough in our community. I had that to some degree, and it did make a difference in me turning out to want to accept, be, you know, for me to even think that I can go on to Howard University, where I went to college, that I can go on to be a chemist. You know, it took that type of encouragement from teachers and giving me
did
money.
Did you
and
get scholarship money to go to college?
I did. I did get some scholarship money to go to Howard and to Xavier University, but I chose Howard. You know, the grades made a difference. You know, having good grades, doing good on my tests. You know what I mean? I wasn't the best test taker, but I did good enough with the combination of my grades, and I got a scholarship, and I went away to college. You know, went to Howard, and it was the best experience of my life going away to college. And, you know, it was hard at times being so far away from home, but, you know, it was a great experience. It was definitely a great experience, and it was I was set for a journey that would take me different, many places. But that journey led me back home.
What happened your first time that you came home? Did you know, when you've never been away from where you've been, and then you go away and you come back? I know I went through that experience. It's like you're looking your friends up and down differently. They're saying that you're looking clean cut. You're not doing this. You're not doing what you used to do. They look at you funny. You're suspicious. I remember accusing people of stealing my things. You know, hey, put my fingernail polish down. Things that didn't bother me before, you know, because I had set these boundaries that I didn't have maybe before I left. Did you feel like you were looking at your family and your loved ones through different eyes, where you could kind of see the history and the culture, and almost like a drowning people? Did you kind of have that sense of, because what you're doing now is life-saving work, that's why I ask.
I think, yes. I think that I realized that, you know, I was a success story. You know, I was the one who had gone on to be successful, you know what I mean? And I realized that many of them were still, you know, just going day by day. And, you know, and I realized that people in New Orleans, you know, things had gotten worse. The murder rate had gotten worse. Everything had gotten worse. Poverty seemed to be worse. So, yes, I was looking at it through different eyes, and I realized, you know, I don't know, it didn't, you know, it hit me at some point, probably after Katrina hit, you know what I mean, how bad it was. And then...
Where were you when Katrina hit? Where were you when Katrina kind of slowed it down?
I was in graduate school at LSU in Baton Rouge, which is an hour outside of New Orleans, and most of my family ended up coming to my apartment thinking they were going to ride out the storm, and they ended up being with me for 2 weeks in a one-bedroom apartment. So here I was in grad school dealing with my family. Everybody lost everything, homes, everything, and I'm just arriving home a year before this was to happen. So I think, that experience and the combination of just seeing how bad it was in New Orleans and the combination of my brother being murdered compelled me to want to make a difference. It changed my life and how I view the rest of my life, and me feeling like that I could make a difference in some way. You know, I mean, I could do something to make a difference, and it compelled me to want to do it, you know, like never before. Before then, you know, I was just trying to be an author, trying to be a best-selling author, it was all about me and trying to get me ahead, trying to make it in the world, trying to go on the, you know, it was all about what I was trying to do. But something between Katrina, my brother being murdered, and some of the things I saw when I came home, changed the way that I wanted to live the rest of my life. I wanted to live it with purpose. So everything that I do now has to have a purpose. I mean, and it feels good to live your life with purpose, that it's not just about making money. You know what I mean? Making money is important, but it's not just about that. Like, the conference had to have a purpose for me. Like I said, authors, not just to get together and sell out books. We do need to sell our books because we need to make money. But while we're selling our books, we're going to impact the community in some way. We're going to it had to have a purpose. Now, I don't know if all the authors understand that, but my hope is as they keep coming in and they keep coming back to the conference, it catches on. I think some of them were touched and moved by the fact that there were 20, 50 youth there, and they were inspired by that. I know Omar Tyree and Victoria Murray and all of them were like, wow, this is amazing that all these young people are here. You know, how are you able to bring all these young people to a literary conference? You know what I mean? And that, you know what I mean? So my hope is that, like I said, it has to have a purpose. And that's where I was, and that's where I'm at now today because of those experiences. And I know that I can be used for a greater purpose. And I'm excited to be used. I mean, it feels good to be used. You know, I have my challenges and things I have to overcome, but it definitely, you know, on July 5th, 2012, I know that when that conference happened, and it's a struggle like it comes to putting a conference together, as you could imagine, when you don't have a lot of money, it's hard when it's a new venture, but it does feel good when you see those kids and you see those people together, and we're coming together for a purpose. If it's just one life we impacted, one person's life was changed, you know, because I believe, and this is important, when I was coming up, I was exposed to different things. That helped too, exposure. Me coming into contact with successful African-American people, business people, professionals, it made me realize that there was a life outside of the projects, that there are people like me that are doctors and lawyers and writers. For those people to come into contact with successful people like yourself, other authors, it's going to make a difference in their lives. It's going to make them see things differently. Because in New Orleans, they're not seeing that every day. In New Orleans, they're seeing poverty, people on the block, violence, that's all they hear in their community. But to come to an event where they're actually successful black people writing books and they care about enough to just take time out to talk to me, they're giving me books, you know what I mean? I know it's going to have an impact. As somebody who's grown up in that city, I know it's going to have an impact. And
books are very powerful. You know, I collect books now because I know the impact they had on my life. I can see my life through the eyes of my older relatives. I had relatives that were better off than my side of the family. So we did grow up, and this one was doing well, and that one was doing well. Some had gone to college, and everyone had jobs just about. these same relatives, they had a different tone than they had when they looked at these young children. See, it's not for what man sees. It's what God knows is going to be in the future. It's not, you know, it's for such a time as this that even that I would come into your life and that you would come into my life, because this is my purpose. Even though I went away and I was around another culture, when I came back, I ended up doing a walkout for my school to get Black history. And, I mean, everything I've done has always been more for my own culture. I write about the things I know about my culture. Now I have 6 decades. I don't just write from the type of stories. I try to capture the things that go on in a particular decade for Black people and that are concerns. These are the type of things I like to write about. I like to write about the thing you mentioned about the murder of your brother. My husband's side of the family, they've had 2 murders of 19-year-old and a 21-year-old, all and both the males, and then there was a female that was killed. But, you know, so young, and that's what my L.A. Blues series, it's not even really something I write. I generally like to write about historical fiction where it's intergenerational and different ages, but this is a younger group of people where they're in their 30s, but they grew up with the drug mothers, with the gang mothers, with the mother in prison. And to follow that journey for them, because I saw it in the books that I edited from the younger people, that this a lot of them have had drug parents, and you know, you're saying you've gone through that, so that's just, to me, that's a testament that nobody can say, oh, this child ain't going to turn out to be nothing, because they, you know, you can't go by how things look. You can look at a lot of famous people's children turn out to be drug addicts. And so we just don't know. Only God knows what's going to happen. But when, I think when kids have gone through a lot and they can survive it and then come back sort of like Rambo to their village and help, because if you're not doing something to help your village, then you're not doing anything. If you're writing something, do something that sends a message to your village, and even if it has to be telling them that it's wrong, this is wrong to deal drugs, it's wrong to have your kids out, you know, prostituting, it's wrong, child prostitution. I think that's our job as a writer. You know, it doesn't have to be all political, and you don't have to just preach on a book, but you still, I'm glad that you wrote a book about your experiences, the first one. And as your first book, does that have a female protagonist?
Yeah, I mean, this is my mother. It's even though I'm telling the story, Cheeky, a young boy, it's really about my mother and her trials and tribulations dealing with abusive relationships, trying to raise sons, her early experiments with drugs. All of that is really about, it's really her story. At the same time, Cheeky's experience is watching her go through this. So as a young boy watching his mother go through these ups and downs in the family and how it impacts him.
Okay. And then your other book, Three Sides to Every Story. Didn't you say you were with, who was that? Is that Random? That was a division of Random House, right?
Hall of Moon. I did get picked up with Hall of Moon thanks to the late Elon Harris, who I started awarding his name at my conference, which I'm very excited about. I mean, it was in New Orleans that I met up with him, got to ride in his limousine, and we went and had lunch at Mother's Restaurant on Parges Avenue. And he and I talked about what I was working on, and he told me he was going to contact his publisher, editor, Janet Hill, which he did, and Janet Hill contacted me, and the rest, I got a book deal with Random House, Hall of Moon, which is the vision of Doubleday, and that was, I give credit to Elon Harris for doing that, for opening that door for me, for talking me up. You know what I mean? He didn't have to do that, and he did, you know, and I was so hurt when he died, you know, when he tried, you know, I heard he died. So I started awarding his name so every year that we could honor him, because he gave back to a lot of writers. So the story that I told, you know, we were on a book tour promoting his last book after he died, and all of us, every writer had a story about how Elon had helped them in some way. So it was not unique that he helped me, because he had helped a lot of people. So he deserves to be honored every year. So at the Bayou Civil Rising Conference, Readers and Writers Conference, every year he'll be honored, and a writer will be honored in his name. So I'm excited about that.
Great. Well, that's good. You know, because that is the whole thing of pulling yourself up and reaching back and helping somebody else, but generally somebody has to help pull us up, and we got to remember that. You know, I had teachers, too, along the way, and plus my first teacher as far as writing was my mother. I just really went into it. My mother was a wordsmith where her words sounded like music. And so I, to this day, have a love of language. When I write, I don't just write the story. I kind of play with the words and the language. But then I also capture a lot of the language that comes from our culture. We have a culture that is so rich in verbal. I mean, I guess that's why rap and jazz, I mean, we've always taken something out of nothing. But poetry, we speak in a very poetic way. And I'm hearing so many expressions that started underground that have become so mainstream now that, it, you know, I say, oh, my goodness. We have created so many things with just even the power of words, and words have the power to bring into reality and reaction. So you just have to affirm that this conference is going to be a success. And this is only the second year. I thought this was your third or fourth year.
This is our second year. We're only in our second year, so we're new. I think everybody, the people who came for the first year were blown away because we did it. So it was nice, and they were like, wow, this is nice for a first-year conference. And, you know, we're in our second year, you know what I mean? And we hope to be around, you know what I mean? If I got to just do it in the room with just me and another student, from I'm going to continue to do this event because I know that in the long run, this event is going to have a major impact on establishing young writers and encouraging reading education in the city where it's lacking. And I know that in the long run. So I'm going to continue to do it. But, yeah, we're in our second year, and it's taking place July 5th and 6th at the Holiday Inn downtown New Orleans in the New Orleans Public Library, which is right across the street. You know, and it's a day of basically we starting off with a breakfast honoring, you know, the theme is Stand on the Shoulders of Giants, so we're honoring James Baldwin. In the name of James Baldwin, we're honoring some writers, Omar Tyree and Eric Jerome Dickey, Carl Weber, and Victor Lavelle. Even though some of them might not be there, we're going to have a breakfast and honor, you know, we're honoring James Baldwin, and some of his family members are going to be there, James Baldwin. And then, you know, they're going to be panel discussions, breakout sessions where we have authors talking about their books, and, you know, the typical thing you would see at a literary conference. And, you know, we have the youth program where we're going to have speakers coming in, motivating and doing speeches and, you know, just motivating and encouraging the young people and life in general. And then after that, we have a reception in the young people's honor, like a luncheon, where there are going to be performances, people performing and singing. Because you're in New Orleans, so you're going to have, you know, if you're going to New Orleans, it's not going to just be a conference. If you're in New Orleans, you're going to have some singing and some food. One thing you're going to do is some good eating and some good music. So we're bringing that all to you at the Bayou Soul Conference. That's why it's called Bayou Soul, because you're going to have a soulful experience. So it's not going to just be reading books. You're going to be entertained, and you're going to be fed well with some New Orleans cuisine, like red beans and rice and jambalaya and gumbo, and we're going to give you the good food at the same time you read your favorite book. That's what makes us different, because you're New Orleans, you know, with all our problems and all the issues going on, we're people that know how to have a good time, entertain, in a very hospitable. We're not a host people. You know, we may not have a lot of money, and we may not have a lot of, we may not have a lot of money, but you won't know it. You know, that's because we do it, and we like to do it big. We like to entertain people. We like to feed them and make them feel happy. So, I want to infuse that into the conference. So
who will be catering the food? Who will be catering the food?
I called this lady out of Baton Rouge called Divas Cuisine, Chef Michelle Conversion. She's also a book club member and loves books. She's going to be catering a lot of the food, as well as the Holiday Inn downtown. So throughout the day, and then later that night from 7 to 9 p.m., I'm so happy we have Grammy Award-winning Rebirth Brass Band who's going to be performing. They won a Grammy. They're going to give you that New Orleans blues and jazz experience. And, you know, we're going to have food there, and we're going to have poetry and entertainment. So we're going to have the poet Loretta Louisiana, Dr. Julie Kane, who is my English professor at Natchitoches. She's going to be, you know, doing her poem. Her book is more scholarly, you know, more. So you're going to have the whole, you know, a poet of Loretta, Louisiana, and also at the same time, you're going to have a spoken word poetry. So it's going to be different type of poetry. Because, you know, I wanted people to be exposed to different things, you know, different art forms. So her work is more on academia type of writing. But, like I said, you also have the spoken word poet there. And you also have some performances, some jazz. And we'll be making presentations. I'm excited at this event. We're also going to be honoring Manny Barron. Manny Barron was my literary agent who passed away. Manny made a way for people in the publishing industry. He opened doors for a lot of writers and made a way. So he's another brother we're honoring. So, like I said, the theme is standing on the shoulders of giants. These people were giants in the industry, Elin Harris and Manny Barron, James Baldwin. And then Friday we have the Phenomenal Women's Luncheon honoring Rashonda Tate Belinsky and Mary Monroe and Rollin Domingue. These are writers that we're going to honor at this Phenomenal Women's Reception at the library. Very excited about that. We have some entertainment, some good food once again. You know, it's just going to be, it's going to be a little great get-together. What I like about the conference is that we're honoring each other. You know, we're honoring and celebrating our achievement. Because, people are there for the Essence Festival. They're going to go see the Mary J. Blige on the main stage that night. You know, writers often get overlooked sometimes. But it's good to pause and honor the literary people because we're the ones telling our stories. You know, we're the ones who tell the stories, and we are the gatekeepers of our stories. But we don't always get the attention, and we're not always celebrated, and we're not always appreciated, and we're not always acknowledged for that. So I'm happy to do it. I mean, I know I'm nobody. I'm just...
I was reading in this book that I'm planning to put up this week on Kindle, and it say, if there isn't a corner, then you create one. You know, you don't just sit and say, well, dog, won't nobody give us a chance? You make a chance. Once I found the internet, I started interviewing other authors first on my website, and then later I ended up doing an internet radio show since 2002. But that was the whole purpose of it, has been to, I get Writer's Magazine, I get The Writer, I get Writer's Digest. I don't see but a few black writers in them, and I mean this is over a period of about 20 years now. So I said, but we have our own record now. We've got all types of black book clubs on Facebook. We got book clubs all over. We got Black Expression. So sometimes you have to create it for yourself. This is something that is unprecedented for other black writers of the previous generations. They didn't have all these opportunities. So all you have to do is come to a conference like this, and there is the opportunity now, if you're a writer, to get your work out there. You just need somebody to kind of guide you through the steps to get it online and to have it edited, well edited. That's why I'm glad to be teaching part of your master class. Over the last, I would say, 10 years of working as an editor, I've seen a lot of writers that I work with make the New York Times. One repeatedly was Carl Weber. And then I've seen a lot that made the Essence bestseller. But then recently it was Wahida. That's the first book of hers that I had worked on. And she had already been on the New York Times. But that shows that we're going from just being on small bestselling lists to bigger and bigger, USA Today lists. And so to write is a craft. This isn't just something you have a story. You also have to learn how to take control of language, theme. You have to learn how to work with your characters, know how to put your hook in there and how to make your page turner, put the cliffhangers at certain points in the scene or at the end of a chapter. You know, it's a lot of little techniques that writers need to know, and that's what this class will be teaching. Do you know what time the class will take place that I'm supposed to teach?
Right now we're thinking it's going to be Friday morning. The morning class is going to be up Friday morning because we have a packed day Thursday. So your class is going to be Friday morning. That's what tentatively right now. I'm trying to figure out a way to do it Thursday. I want to have it Thursday, but there's so much going on that it might have to be Friday morning. But they just should check back on the website to a more updated schedule in about a week. We'll have everything finalized, and that's at bswconference.com. That's B as in boy, S as in Sam, W as in water, conference, bswconference.com. They can get all the information, see video clips from last year, see, you know, pictures from last year, see my CNN interview. They can get a lot of information, who's coming, what authors are going to be there, how to register. You know what I mean? You know, we made the price affordable. It's only $125. And that includes, like I say, all access to all the events, all the food you're going to eat. So, like I say, you don't have to worry about food between the breakfast and the luncheons. You know, you'll get some good eating, and, you know, which you can save you a lot of money when you're in New Orleans and trying to go to different restaurants. So we'll have food there and entertainment for you. And some of the best authors in the business. I mean, you can't get no better than that. Some of the top authors in the country, some good New Orleans cuisine, and some jazz for Rebirth Brass Band. It's definitely going to be, you know, a nice event.
Your website, too. Who did your website for you? Please give that website out again. You kind of rushed through it. Say your website again.
B as in boy, S as in Sam, W as in water, conference.com. So that's bswconference.com. And the website was done by my cousin, Sharika Mahdi, of mahdicreations.com. She is a very talented artist in her own right. Her work is just phenomenal. I mean, when I tell you it's phenomenal, she's, you know, and I know I'm being biased because that's my cousin, but no, she's very talented. And, you know, she actually gives the award out to the phenomenal women's writers who win they get an original painting from her that she gave out last year. She's going to give another original painting out to the winner, you know, to the ones who have been honored this year, Mary Monroe and Rosa. You know, they're getting an original painting, and it's phenomenal. Wait till you see it. She did the website. She does all the graphics, all the web. She designed my logo. Everyone loves the Bayou Soul logo. She took my vision and created the logo within a week. It was like destiny. It was meant to be. So I'm really honored to have her, as well as my other cousin, Toya Jones. She's an event planner, Your Vision, My Creation. So it's a family affair. So I had my cousins, first cousins. We all grew up together. They saw what I was trying to do, particularly in my brother's name, and they came together and they rallied around me, and they supported me, as well as these book club women. I mean, we had book club women from Mississippi, some in New Orleans. These women came out on that day, and you're going to see they come out, and they will support an event like this. They love authors. They love reading. They see what I'm trying to do, and they rallied around me, and they helped me. They volunteered their time to help me keep everything organized. It was really great of an experience to work with them.
Is Walter Johnson planning to be here this year? I'm looking at the pictures on the website.
Walter of the BET reality show, Toya Family, so he and his wife, Natasha Johnson, they would definitely be in the house. They went on a tour with me early in the year to high schools in New Orleans to promote the event and to promote the scholarship and the reason we did television appearances together. They are very committed to, you know, he and I are going to be getting together and planning some stuff and establishing. We're trying to establish a school to educate young people in the arts and stuff. So he and I are definitely teaming up to do some great things. So they're definitely going to be there. He's a very powerful speaker, as well as his wife, and a powerful performer. I mean, he's going to be rapping. He's an artist as well. So I'm excited about you. He'll be there.
That's great. Well, I'm telling you, I love this website. It's just so colorful. The last time I was in New Orleans, it was after Hurricane Katrina, and it looked kind of, you know, like she'd been battered and hadn't been fixed back up. Have they done more rebuilding since then? I hope they have. It's been about 7 years.
Oh, yeah, you'll see that. It's definitely much more built up. We're back, not in full effect, but we're definitely back strong. You know, like I said, we have our issues with the murder rate and all those things, but it's a city that's coming back, and you'll see that it's been built back up, and there's a lot of positive things also going on. one of them being Essence that comes every year, the Essence Music Festival. A lot of people in town for that. And then you have, like, now you have the Bayou Soul Rising Readers Conference while you're in town. You know, we start a day before Essence begins, the Thursday, July 5th. So if you're in town a day early and you want to get your literary, you know, treat on, you come to the Bayou Soul Conference, and you know, some people come in a day early because they just want to get in, you know. So Friday, Essence begins. We're ending right around the time Essence begins, so people won't feel like they're in conflict with our conference in Essence. So they'll get, our conference in and then go enjoy the Essence Festival.
That's great. Let me see if we have any emails. Corey, do we have any emails?
Yeah, we actually have one email here. Let me pull it up real quick. All right, it reads, who are some of your main influences as far as being an author, and why have they been an influence on you?
I didn't hear the question. I'm sorry.
Who are some of your main influences as an author, and why have they been such an influence on you?
Oh, well, one of my biggest influences is Maya Angelou, Dr. Maya Angelou. Dr. Angelou has been an influence. I've always, from when I was in high school, I've always admired, you know, from watching Roots and then reading her book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, you know, hearing about her in high school and then having the opportunity to go see her perform. I remember I was a student in high school and my cousin, James, who was studying to be a doctor in New Orleans at Tulane, he invited me to see Dr. Angelou speak. And when I got, you know, when I got into the auditorium, it was an auditorium because we were at Tulane. It was predominantly white, and I was like, "Well, who is this woman that all these white people are coming to see her?" You know what I mean? And she's not a sailor. I mean, she's not. You know what I mean? She's not. I wanted to know who she was. I didn't really know who she was. And she stepped onto that stage and she started reciting "Phenomenal Woman." I'm a phenomenal woman. That's me, and just mesmerized me. And I have been in love with Maya Angelou ever since. I didn't know at the time.
My favorite poem of hers, I know what you mean. I love that poem.
You're right, and I didn't know there was a family connection until after that day. I mean, we were connected through our families. She and my dad's side, her and my family had been really close for many, many years, so I came into that knowing. At that time, I was not a writer myself. I still, you know, about to go to college and discover who I was. I didn't even know I was a writer yet. But when I became a writer, she immediately embraced me. When Cheeky came out, she did a book signing for me at her home, and she told me that it wasn't about me. She said, that, you know, this is not really, all this, you, this book publishing, and it's not really about you. I didn't understand what she meant. I was like, what did she mean it wasn't about me? I mean, I didn't know. It would take many years of me going through my own stuff for me to realize that it really isn't about me. But she's been a great supporter and, you know, just, somebody who's had a really positive influence on my life and somebody that I really admire and respect. Also, like I say, Elin Harris, who, you know, paved the way for many writers and opened the door for me. He's another influence. Alice Walker, Ernest Gaines, who was my professor. I took a class with Ernest Gaines. He's a Louisiana, you know, he's well known, but he's also a Louisiana writer.
Wow. And he was your professor. I've been reading him for years. I think I read him back in the 70s.
He was my professor, yep.
Wow.
I took a class with him. I'm honored to say that. Got notes for him, personal notes from him. I got a book, his very first short story that he wrote, The Sky is Blue. He wrote a book, and he said it was so hard for him to get that book, that short poem, published. And now it's the most sought-after short story in the world. So he told me, you never know what's going to happen. Keep writing. You never know, you know, what's going to be sought after, what you're going to become. You don't write for that purpose. Just keep writing. So he's been a great influence as well. And, you know, as well as a lot of young and up-and-coming artists like Terry McMillan. And, you know, it was Terry McMillan's success and Eric Jerome Dickey's success and Omar Tyree's success early in the game that made me believe that I could actually write a book and make money. You know, I think them, at the time, you know, they were dominating the market. Everybody was talking about Elin Harris, Eric Jerome Dickey, Terry McMillan, Omar Tyree. There was a time when they were the new hot thing in the game. And I think their success and the type of money they were getting for book deals propelled other people to think that they could do it too. I was one. one of those people, so they had influence as well. I really believed it. You know what I mean? I was like, well, they're making money and they're telling their stories. I have a story to tell. It ignited something in me to want to write. And, you know, so all those people have had an influence on me.
All right. Thank you. I'm sorry.
In some small or big way, they had an impact on me as a writer.
I was just going to let you know that was from Cheyenne in Akron, Ohio.
Oh, okay.
So people from all over are listening. I put it on Facebook again today, and I put it out on Saturday, and then on Twitter. We have so many ways to get word out. I find so much good information on Twitter and Facebook now. I even keep up with the news, and it feels good to be to know pop culture now. I don't watch the news. You find out somebody died. You find it out on the Internet. Who got arrested, who did this, who did that. I say, boy, you can keep up with everything on the Internet now. But I saw an article where it was saying that the downside of the Internet is that writers are not using the library as much. So I'm glad you're having something at your local library, and I plan to start going back to my library more to do my research and things.
Oh, definitely. The library, New Orleans Public Library, African American Resource Center have been working with us diligently, been very, very supportive of us. And I think it's a great collaboration because, that's, like you said, the library, we need to take it back to the library. You know what I'm saying? That's where, you know, it used to be at. That's where events used to be at. And that's where that collaboration felt right. It just felt like the right thing to do. And they've been working with us, and we're excited about working with them again.
Well, you're really doing a good job. I really thought this was a much older conference. Well, I can attest to the power of this conference and the power of networking from this conference. I wasn't even there, and I benefited. Like I said, Sheila's new book. Sheila's new book is called, and this is for her, kind of a more of a pushing the envelope in a different area for her. It's called Sade's Secret, and it's by Sparkle. That's her pseudonym. She writes so much. And so I'd like everyone to check that book out. But that it was born at your conference. It was conceived at your conference, let me put it that way.
Wow.
It just came out the first of the month. So it is out, and it's under Wahida Clark Presents Company.
Wow. I love Wahida Clark, and I love Sheila Gross. I'm really excited that happened and connected through at the Bayou Soul Rising Readers Conference. I tell you, a little small conference, you know, only was around for 1 year, made that impact and had an impact on you. That's, you know, years from now, you know, that does my heart good. It really does my heart good to hear that. It really, you know, this struggle of trying to keep it together and pull it together and running around, organizing it, it means a lot when I hear stuff like that. So thank you.
Oh, yes. You know, I'm not good with conferences, but I try to support them. I've been active in supporting Black Writers on Tour here in Los Angeles, and it stopped for 2 years, and we didn't have anything, so it started back. And what I noticed the difference is that it's just as packed without spending a lot of money like you used to spend at the big hotels and a lot of money on advertising on the radio. It's not even as necessary now. If most of these writers that are part of this conference shoot out emails and post on their Facebook wall and Twitter and LinkedIn and even go back to the old MySpace, you could pack this conference out. It's not always the money. It's the idea that time has come that will provide that momentum for this. And so I just believe when it's something that's for a positive purpose. You know, I see all the young people you have at this on the pictures here, and they definitely need some hope that they can do this, that they can write. I'm so glad that we have a generation of writers now that our young people can witness and see, because what we're doing is bearing witness to our passage here in the United States. We, the former children of those who chose to survive the Middle Passage. I love that line. You know, that was taken from Daughters of the Dust. That's what Nana Passant said. We are the children of those who chose to survive, those who didn't jump off the ship and kill themselves. You know, so that's why we're so strong.
Right. You're right. Wow. I mean, that's deep. But yeah, we got to honor that past. Because right. that's why the theme is standing on the shoulders of giants, because we're standing on their shoulders, those people who came before us. You know, I'm all about acknowledging the ancestors and people who came before me, because I knew I wouldn't be here had it not been for people like my grandmother, who, 84 years old, had been writing all of her life. Imelda Kaya had been writing all of her life, but never thought she would be published. Well, I helped her publish her book of poems called Soul of a Sister last year. She premiered it at the conference. And you know, that really touched my heart. You know what I mean?
For her dream
to be realized at 84 years old. But she never thought she would write be published. She always wrote for the love of writing. Have hundreds of manuscripts, but never published them. So we put that book together. My cousin Sharika did the art design. I helped her organize everything, and it's called Soul of a Sister. You'll see her at the conference again this year, because she's doing a special tribute to the honorees and at the Phenomenal Women's Luncheon. I'm excited, you know, that people get to meet my grandmother. But she, you know, went through the Civil Rights Movement. She told a riveting story of being on the bus, you know, and having to be, you know, and incident that went down. You know, those type of, you know, stories like that. You know, and knowing that,
I love it. You know, that's the type of stories I love to hear. I love to hear the elders speak, and I'm becoming one, but it's the elders over me, because so many of them didn't like to tell. I think they were trying to shield us from the past, and they didn't tell us enough. And now it's like I'm running around. When I did the Ebony Tree, I interviewed some of my older relatives who at that time were in their 70s and 80s. And I was able to find a lot of family history, and I fictionalized it in my first novel. But you really, and I used a lot of stories from different people that I had interviewed that went back to slavery and their family in my second novel. And so you really have to talk to the elders, because a lot of our history wasn't written down. And
right.
If you don't write it down, you lose it. And so this way we can capture it again. I am so happy that you have this conference coming up. I'd like you to give out your books again so that people can go out and buy them. I see you have more than two when I looked up on Amazon.
Yeah, I have more than two. I have, Cheeky, A Child Out of Desire, which is my first novel. And then I have Three Sides to Every Story. And then the sequel to that is Too Much of a Good Thing, Ain't Bad. And my grandmother's book is called Soul of a Sister. My Melba Kaya, so you can also check out her book. And the website again is bswconference.com. You know, you can find all the information about who's going to be there, who's coming, what's going to be going on, and all that good stuff. And like I said, in a couple of weeks, we'll be down at the Essence Festival, getting, you know, at the Bayou Soul Rising Readers Conference, and we'll have a good time. And I'm excited about, you know, it's not too late to register. It's not too late to come down. You know, it's going to be a good time. It's definitely going to be an experience. It's not going to be just another literary conference. It is going to be a whole experience. You're going to leave feeling like you made a difference and that you were part of something that was history in the making. It is history in the making. The Bayou Soul Rising Readers Conference 2012, history in the making. Because we're impacting people, we're impacting young people, and you can't go wrong in that way. You're investing in them, so I know you can't go wrong, and they'll be telling stories about it. So that's why I know it's historical, because they're going to be there and they're going to tell those stories of being there with those writers, those great writers who assembled under one roof.
That'll be wonderful, and this, you know, just to put hope in a young person's eyes can make the difference in them going to college or, you know, following their dream to become a writer. This can be such a great opportunity for aspiring writers. So please, those listening, the show will be archived on artistfirst.com, and I'll take that link and run it through Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn once the show is archived. But please come next month. I want you to give out the date, the time, and the registration information and the website one more time.
It's Thursday, July 5th, and Friday, July 6th, in New Orleans at the Holiday Inn downtown New Orleans on Loyola Street in the New Orleans Public Library, which is right across the street. The website is bswconference.com, and the registration is $125 for the whole event. We have individual prices, like if you just want to come to the meet and greet that night with the authors with Rebirth Brass Band, it's $50. So there's an opportunity, if you can't afford the whole price, you can come to some events. All that information on the website. We also have a few vendor tables left. You could also take out an ad. If you can't be there, you're a writer, but you want to get your exposure to some of these people that are going to be there, you want to expose your book, you can take out an ad in our souvenir program. There's still time to do that. All this at bswconference.com.
All right. Well, thank you, Clarence Nero, founder of the Black, By Yourself Leaders and Writers Conference.
Thank you, Dr. Thompson, for having me. It's been a great conversation.
All right.
Look forward to seeing you down in New Orleans.
All right. I look forward to seeing you. I look forward to meeting you in person. I feel like I know you, though we've only been talking since last November.
Right.
But I wish you all the best, and I'm please imploring people to come and support this event. I do believe it's historical, and I believe it's spiritual, because there's a very spiritual vibration in New Orleans. Whenever I've gone through there, it's like I can feel such a connection to the ancestors that was there. Wasn't that a slave port at one point?
It was.
Yeah,
there's something special about that place. There's definitely history in there, and you feel it. You feel it in the music, the food.
You'll feel it as a writer. This could be your next novel. This could be your National Book Award winning novel, a Pulitzer Prize winning novel that can get inspired in New Orleans. I just think it's such a wonderful place in terms of, the history there, the Creoles, and, even with what happened with Hurricane Katrina, it's still I Rise. You're still surviving, and they didn't sink, so, and people are coming
still
back.
Still I Rise, right? Still I Rise.
Yep.
Still I Rise.
Yep. I Rise. Okay, well, thanks again, and I will see you next month. Have a good one.
Okay.
All right. Please return next week to the Dr. Thompson Show. See you next week. Love you all.